Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, just so you know, not that it really should impact anything. And by not impacting anything, I mean impacting everything. James Kelly is not only in the house. James Kelly is on the board. James Kelly is running the show. James Kelly is responsible for pretty much everything. Anything and everything that happens today falls under his watch. Avi is out. He's already doing it. I've already told James, look, great to have you here. Do what you got to do. Do what you have to do and do what you want to do, because I'm just so grateful to have you here. Alvy is... No, okay, all right, James, seriously. When I said you do whatever the hell you want, I meant do whatever the hell you want except that. Alvy is out doing whatever the hell he wants, namely probably making kids. James, dude, seriously. All right, you've got both of those out of your system. It's done. I have to do a show here. We have an actual program to do, James.
It's a matter of time. She's not lonely. I apologize.
Are you sure you're done, dude? Because if you're not done, you might be fired. Hey, Tommy, have you ever run the board? Can the two of you flip? Man, thank God we're not on TV right now. But we will be soon. Streaming. On the X platform. All right, so now you know. If you're wondering why you're hearing sound bites like that, the ones that are normally not permitted, it's because James Kelly has commandeered the board. Telephone number is toll free, 1-800-636-8686. And when I talk about commandeering the board, I mean the show. I mean the life. 1-800-636-8686. Feel free to hit me up on the X platform too at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E at haveatake.com. So the interviews set up as follows. Sam Amick, senior NBA reporter for The Athletic, joins me at 9:40. Haven't run him down in a minute. And we are coming down to the end of the regular season in the NBA. So it seemed like a good time to find Sam Amick, 9:40. Second hour is wide open, no guest. Coming up in the final segment of the program, Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovello. Great jungle skip. They had an amazing run last year. Torey Lovello joins me at 11:40. So hit me up. You have your telephone number. If you know what you want to talk about, I would encourage you to hit me right now. And yes, James Kelly is running the show. All right, topic number one. You want to talk about living up to the hype. You want to talk about star power. You want to talk entertainment value. Then we have to talk about that amazing night of women's college hoops, because it had all those things. It checked all those boxes. I don't even need to go all Russell Crowe on you and ask, are you not entertained? Nice, James. Well done. Because of course you were entertained. The only way you were not entertained is if you were not tuned in. Or if you were like Alvin and you picked less than 32.5 points for Caitlin Clark on Prize Picks. Or you were like me and you listened to Alvin and did what he suggested. We should have known better, because we should have known that Caitlin Clark was not going to let that revenge game opportunity go by without making a major statement. And yes, I'm well aware that she tried to say that it was not a revenge game. But can we be real? It was a revenge game. Of course that was a revenge game. If by it not being a revenge game, you mean it was the ultimate revenge game, then yes, I agree. That was not a revenge game. Of course that was a revenge game. Of course she wanted to avenge a championship game loss from last year. Of course she wants to add national champion to her comically long list of achievements, considering national champion is essentially the only thing that's not on that list of achievements. And of course, she did not want her last college basketball game to come in the Elite Eight against the same team that stopped her last year. It's all a given, right? So of course that was a revenge game. And of course, a killer like her was going to be out for blood last night. And she was from the very jump, from the very tip. She was locked in. Locked in from that very first possession when she drilled that first shot of the game. Which is why it probably would have been a good idea to have a plan in place to try to stop her. Now, you might argue that she's unguardable and unstoppable. And yes, I know Kim Mulkey is incredibly accomplished, and I know she's got a lot on her mind these days. And I know there really is no easy way to stop or even slow Caitlin Clark, because if there was, somebody would have figured it out by now. But whatever LSU was trying to do last night, whatever they were trying to do, well, I couldn't tell. But whatever it is they were trying to do, that wasn't it. It didn't work. And yet, somehow, some way, despite Clark going wild, LSU hung in that game. They made it a game, and they held on as long as they possibly could, even after Angel Reese turned her ankle and stopped making any shots. So credit to LSU for digging in, for fighting, because they were never going to beat Iowa without Reese. And they were never going to beat them without a decent plan for Clark. And by the way, in their defense, I'm not sure a decent plan exists for Clark. But, all of that said, do we really need to hate on LSU in the aftermath of that game? I mean, what is so fun about treating the LSU women's basketball team like a punching bag and all that's wrong in the world? There's a lot wrong in the world, but that's not what's all wrong in the world. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff in the world, but if we're led to believe what's true and what's not, apparently it all stems from that team. The origin point of everything bad in the world is the LSU women's basketball team. You want to know why the world's so jacked up? Baton Rouge. I mean, that's the way people are making it sound. You want to know why this world is so jacked up right now? The women's locker room in Baton Rouge. I mean, that's the way people were reacting. Why do we need to hate on them? In fact, don't answer that. Don't answer that because I don't need to hear it. I know many of you have your justifications as to why it's okay to hate on these players. You know, players you've never met, players you've never spoken to. On a team that actually is pretty fun to watch. Just know to most of us who don't spend our time hating on these players via social media, it's all pretty weird. It's all pretty weird. Weird, but I guess not surprising. No, the surprising strays last night were all directed at the regional host city of Albany. Now, to be very clear, I personally believe I have jungle Tourette's. There is no cure. Personally, I have absolutely nothing against Albany or any of upstate New York for that matter. In fact, Albany and upstate New York have been very good to this show forever. So good that I've got nothing against either. I love you all. I really have nothing against anybody. If we can get right down to it. I have nothing against anybody because I know I have enough to worry about just worrying about myself. So why would I waste time worrying about anybody else? I have nothing against anybody, but especially Albany and upstate New York. Two of the last things that I would ever have an issue with. So can I be so clear on that? I have nothing against Albany. It's just that apparently Rebecca Lobo does. Did you hear this on the broadcast when Caitlin Clark's family came up? Because Albany definitely heard it.
Though she told us, they've been reaching out to me, and I've told them, just go find something to do in Albany. I'm staying in my room and just waiting for the game.
And by the way, good luck finding something to do in Albany.
Oh! Look out! Head on a swivel, Albany. Damn, that's wild. never would have ever imagined hearing Rebecca Lobo, of all people, going in on Albany, of all places. I mean, like, Gino in San Antonio goes in on Detroit. Albany was out here last night catching Joe Noah Cleveland-level strays. And if you know anything about Albany, you know Albany was not going to take that crap lying down. This is, after all, Albany we're talking about. If you think Caitlin Clark was the only person with revenge on their mind last night, you thought wrong. Because there was no way in hell Albany was going to let that slander stand. Check out the immediate rebuttal by the local NBC affiliate after the game. This is even more incredible than the first unprovoked punch.
Yeah, come on, guys. You heard that right. Commentators taking some cheap shots against our fair city of Albany, including Rebecca Lobo. That comment was mentioned during tonight's broadcast. Well, Discover Albany, as well as some other local leaders, hitting back against that comment, saying, quote, there's plenty of things to do in Albany, tagging Lobo in the post. They also included a link to their website, as well as events calendars. Plenty of stuff happening around here locally. Come on, guys. Event Albany, Mayor Kathy Sheehan, also commenting, saying, yeah, there's plenty to do if you just take the time to look. Some of the nation's oldest museums, a stately capital, award-winning restaurants, and, of course, a basketball game or two downtown. Mayor Sheehan even saying she'd be more than happy to show Lobo around town. Well, also, you know, as the saying goes, you know, if you're bored, you're just a boring person, right?
Oh! Big voice went there. Hey, by the way, bro, whoever you are, amazing pipes. Whoever you are, amazing pipes. If I had that guy's voice, I would have gone into the Radio Hall of Fame so much sooner. I love the way they lay it all out. Like, all these local leaders are saying, man, the hell is the matter with you, Rebecca? Hey, Bex, there are all these things that there are to do here if you would just come out of your room and look around. But I love the way he hammered that point home by saying, you know the old saying, if you're bored, you're just a boring person. Bam! Hey, Big Head, do you not know where the explosion button is? Thank you. I was going to say, now would be a pretty damn good time to smash it. Holy crap, dude.
Somebody. Goes, you know, if you're bored, you're just a boring person, right?
Right. Somebody. Way to go, Head. Nice job. Somebody pull local news, bro, off Rebecca Lobo. Damn. I mean, you want to talk about the game within the game. Iowa v. LSU was actually the game within the game because the real game was Lobo v. Albany. I mean, USC-UConn was awesome. LSU v. Iowa was legendary, but Lobo v. Albany was the main event, and it did not disappoint. If this were UFC, Dana White would be handing a $50,000 check to local news bro for the knockout of the night. If you're bored, it's probably because you're a boring person.
As the saying goes, you know, if you're bored, you're just a boring person, right?
Listen, Albany, by the sounds of it, you're all pretty butthurt. But this is not really personal at all. You have to understand, most people watching that were wondering why that game was in Albany. And everybody in the arena was wondering why they were sitting and watching a game in Albany. So if Rebecca Lobo said it out loud, that means pretty much everybody else was thinking it. She just said the quiet part out loud. And again, Albany, I don't want that heat. I don't want that fire. I don't want local news bro on me. I've got nothing against you. I'm just saying she was not the only one thinking that. You can't be that naive. Just know this. Now you see, Albany, I've got your back on this too. Just know this. If you try Albany, you're going to find out. Because local news, bro, and the local NBC affiliate was not the only one that bum-rushed Lobo. The local CBS affiliate wanted a piece of her as well.
Nice work. The number one thing that we really all learned the last few days of March Madness in Albany is that a few small complaints from small people about Albany as a site for this tournament were completely unfounded. Just as superstars like Clark and Angel Reese shined on the big stage, so too did the city of Albany and the MVP arena.
Damn. A few small complaints from small people. I don't know, isn't Lobo like 6'8"? Albany! Look, I don't have a dog in the fight. I actually could bet either dog. I think Albany thinking this is the ultimate reason to go is kind of funny. Since what she said was really actually pretty benign. Then again, in Albany's defense, pretty rich of somebody who played in Storrs, Connecticut, and has spent as much time as she has in Bristol, Connecticut, is talking crap about how boring Albany is. That's pretty rich. But then again, when you look at it that way, she probably is an authority. The ultimate authority on boring-ass towns where there's nothing to do. I mean, she would know. This is what I know. Top to bottom, that was a pretty damn entertaining night. And yes, I was entertained. I'm still entertained. James Kelly is even entertained. We are joined right now by a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. Also the co-host of The Athletic's Tampering Podcast. He previously covered the NBA for USA Today, Sports Illustrated, and the Sacramento Bee. In other words, my man is connected. He's dialed in. He is Sam Amick. Sam, my brother, what's going on? How you doing?
Romy, what's going on, sir? Been a minute. Great to hear your voice. Thank you for having me.
Exactly. It's been a minute, and that's why I had to come find you and run you down, Sam. I appreciate it. Let me start in the West. Devin Booker, Sam, exploded for 52 last night. And the Suns, as an alleged super team, well, they've been anything but that, but they did finally finish one last night against the Pelicans. They're in the 7-hole right now. What do you see when you watch them, and do you think they've got any kind of deep postseason run in them?
They don't feel like they do. You know, you're going to have to respect them and you know, see what they can do because of the star power. You know, I remember talking to Book a couple months ago about the idea that once the playoffs hit, you know, his opinion back then, and I'm sure it hasn't changed, is that they were going to be a matchup problem for anybody. I mean, they've had the Bradley Beal injury stuff all year long, some of the other guys being banged up. You know, we know the story in terms of the way they're constructed on the roster with, you know, so much of it being top heavy and having a hard time getting role players. You know, the Yusuf Nurkic addition, I don't think has been as impactful as they had hoped. He's a good fit, but you know, they're not an elite team. They're a team that I think probably at best right now has become a first round, you know, you got to be worried about them type of opponent instead of an actual title contender.
Sam Amick joining us. All right, Sam, what about Dallas and Golden State? They've got a big one tonight. I know you're feeling pretty good about Dallas these days, and rightfully so, right? They've caught fire. They've won 7 straight. They've won 9 of their last 10. In fact, why don't you weigh in on the big debate right now? Who is the most lethal offensive weapon in the league as we speak, Luka or Joker?
I love the debate. I mean, you know, the Dallas coverage I had this week was because they came through my part of the country. I enjoyed diving into their story, talking to Luka. I probably still got to give it to Joker, but I think it's pretty close. I think he unleashes his teammates a little bit more than Luka does, although, you know, Luka is pretty elite in that category as well. But, man, Luka right now I think is probably number two on my MVP ballot. You know, Joker's efficiency and the fact that the Nuggets have been better collectively I think matters. But those two guys are killing. And the Mavs, obviously, you know, it's a development for them because they're playing defense all of a sudden, and they look like a team. You know, if you compare them, for example, to Phoenix and what they were supposed to be, you know, Dallas is kind of becoming that in reality, where I think whether it's Denver, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, you know, whoever might see them, or the Clippers, you know, at some point in the playoffs, you know, it would not shock me at all to see Dallas survive one of those series.
I think you made a key point. Dallas is playing defense all of a sudden. Sam Amick is joining us. You mentioned the MVP. What about last year's MVP, the big fella, Joel Embiid? He hasn't played since January 30th. That procedure on his left meniscus was February 6th. Given his injury history, what's your reaction to the news that he's expected to return this week?
I love it for storyline purposes because you're talking again, Romy. I mean, this guy was the best player in the game last year. Now, admittedly, I did vote Giannis for MVP, but the guy won the award. He's incredible. It seems like he is really healthy, legitimately ready to rock, and that's huge because we saw with that Philly team that, all right, Tyrese Maxey developed, got better, ascended, but once the big fella was gone, you saw the limitations in Maxey's game. You saw how Tobias Harris didn't play as well because he didn't have that offensive fulcrum of Embiid doing his thing down low. You know, the Buddy Hield addition didn't pop like they had hoped it would. And Joel is the key to all that. So you talk about an 11th hour, you know, kind of unexpected storyline that could impact the playoff landscape in the East. I think it's legitimate because as great as Boston has been, we all know that with them, it's just a question of, all right, you know, can he do it in the playoffs? Big-time upset potential, I think, for Philly.
Sam Amick joining us. I was going to say, Sam, it definitely affects the landscape, maybe even the power of balance to a certain, or balance of power to a certain extent. But you make the point about the Celtics. I was going to ask you about that because over the past 11 years, only the 2016 Cavaliers have advanced to the NBA Finals as the top seed in the East. The Celtics have been dominant this year, but to your point, we know what happens come postseason time often with them. I mean, is this year different in your mind? Would you be shocked if they don't at least make it out of the East, or do they still have to prove that to you?
I would be shocked, but, you know, again, we haven't seen them do it. I was there in Boston when they went up on the Warriors in the finals a couple years back, and that's a pretty tough moment for them. A little bit analogous to the Suns when they did the same thing against the Bucks and then ended up losing the series. That sticks with you for years. When it comes to this Boston group, to their credit, all they've done is get better. They've evolved. They added Porzingis. You know, they did the Marcus Smart trade. They got Jrue Holiday. And I love their team. Yes, they have to prove it to everybody in the playoffs, but if I was a bet man, I would certainly be putting my money on them in the East. But then you look at it, I mean, just last week or within the last 10 days, you know, they dropped two games to Atlanta and you kind of go, okay, there it is. You know, like they are human after all. And so you know that potential is there. And so we'll see how they do it.
Sam Amick joining us. Sam, what about the Lakers? So LeBron goes off for 40 in Sunday's win over the Nets. And when asked after the game how much longer he thought he could do it, he said, quote, "I don't have much time left," end of quote. I mean, yeah, I mean, theoretically, Sam, right? He is in his 21st season, so that would stand a reason. But, I mean, he is the guy who's been saying forever he's waiting on Bronny. So what do you make of him saying, "I don't have much time left"?
I personally, Romy, I thought the interview was a little, there wasn't much to it for me. Because he also said, you know, "I'm not playing another 21 years. I know that much for damn sure." And I think that's almost a direct quote. So, I mean, it was, you know, he didn't put a timeline on it. The Bronny thing obviously has gotten a little more uncomfortable this year with the way he struggled at USC and the health stuff that he went through. I think LeBron kind of learned the hard way that, you know, he needed to pull back on that, you know, and putting the spotlight there and let his son just kind of find his way and have his own journey. So I think he's got too many factors that are unknown about how long he might want to play. For him to be able to say how long it's going to be. As far as what he's capable of doing, the guy obviously looks like he could, you know, probably play another 5 years. So I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. But, you know, like he said, he's certainly on the back end.
We are talking to Sam Amick for a few more moments. Sam, going back to Golden State for a minute, got that big matchup tonight. You know, they're grinding just to stay in the playing field. How do you think it plays out for them? In other words, do they find their way in and maybe do some damage because of that DNA and championship pedigree? Or frankly, has it run its course and is it time to finally consider blowing it up?
I feel like it's run its course. I don't know if that means they're going to blow it up. But, I mean, because I don't currently view them as a playoff threat. I just don't. You know, the other night they beat San Antonio. Okay, fine. That's San Antonio. Draymond had a great game. It's still, you know, the worst team in the West. this summer, let's go ahead and just say they don't, you know, get out of the first round in the playoffs. Maybe they lose in the play-in tournament. Then you got Klay Thompson, who's going to be a free agent. Draymond obviously is going to be entering the second year of his new deal. You know, he's got a long-term contract. That's where Joe Lacob, the Warriors owner, is going to have to read the room, figure out, you know, who stays and who goes. The Klay thing for me, at least right now, is probably the most interesting and compelling in terms of the, you know, guys that I would handicap as having a real possibility of going elsewhere. I mean, what if a team like Orlando comes his way or Philly and says, you know, we think you're an important piece. We're going to throw a bunch of money at you. The Warriors have you coming off the bench a lot of times. You know, maybe that is appealing to him. He I think, has felt not necessarily appreciated all the way through this past couple of seasons with the Warriors. I think that's been a bit of an issue. So change could be coming. And no, I think their days of title contention with this group are over.
Sam Mamick joining us. Sam, before you go, how about the Final Four? Let me get your thoughts on this. I don't know how far you've gotten into this, but you look at NC State, and they've had this amazing run, and you've got that big man, DJ Burns, who everybody loves. How do scouts think that he projects on the next level? Have you looked into that?
I haven't. I wish I had more for you there. I mean, I know in general the big man discussion is pretty interesting with the league right now in relation to the college game. You know, Purdue's got their big fella that is, I think, also a bit of a quandary for scouts to figure out, where the question becomes, you know, what does college dominance translate to in today's NBA? Because it has shifted again back towards the bigs, but it's not just any old big. We talked about Joker and the Giannis's and the Embiid's. These are incredibly skilled bigs who can run the floor, most of them, and do multiple things. So bridging that gap, I guess, is I think, a major challenge for NBA scouts right now.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder how much Zach Edey's helped himself. Like, he's been so dominant. He was the player of the year last year. He's going to be the player of the year again this year. He's back in the Final Four. If you had to guess, do you think he's helped himself dramatically to a certain extent?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. Because, I mean, for one, you know, I didn't even mention Wemby and Gobert and these guys who can change things at the rim defensively. And by the way, as you're well aware, the league is all of a sudden shifting back into trying to help defenses be able to do their thing. And so that matters from a scouting point of view. So size matters. So, I think he's helped himself a lot. Anytime you're talking about, you know, 40 and 20 games, things like that, that's going to get the attention of scouts. And look at the Timberwolves, for example. Regardless of what they do in the playoffs, Tim Connelly, the head of their front office, who came from the Nuggets, literally went out and said, all right, in order to take down the Joker, I need Rudy Gobert, I need Naz Reid, I need Karl Anthony Towns, I need size. So, bigs are kind of sexy again in the NBA. It's just a matter of fit and versatility and skill set.
Well said. Minnesota's got a big one tonight, too. Love the T-Wolves. Sam Amick is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. He's also the co-host of The Athletic's Tampering Podcast. Good friend of the program. Had to run you down, Sam. It's been a minute. Great to have you on. Thanks so much. Always appreciate that great conversation.
Appreciate you, Roman. Be good, brother.
You too. Be good, Sam. Sam Amick is one of my favorites. I don't play favorites, but Sam Amick is one of my favorites. Every day when we're on the road, people around us endanger themselves and others by using their phones while driving. They think they're hiding it, but we've all seen them and know exactly who they are. For instance, there's the sneak-a-peeker who darts their eyes between the road and their texts. There's also the got-a-ticketer looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving. And what about the fast-scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter, who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark. Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or somebody you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. More thoughts on the women's tourney. So while Rebecca Lobo and others were piling on Albany, and Albany was not accepting that slander at all, Albany was swinging back. Flurries. Albany was stomping on heads. Albany was curb stomping anybody who dared say anything about them. especially Lobo. The locals were not having it. And although there might have been an overreaction, I get it. I get it. Some big national celebrity comes into your town, talks junk about your town. You're not having it. Like I said, I don't have a dog in that fight. I see both sides. I actually like the fight. I like the beef. Anyway, what I was about to say is, while Lobo and others were in fact piling on Albany and Albany was swinging back, I will give Albany this much. At least they got the three-point lines right. At least they did not blow any absolutely crucial measurements on the court the way they did up in Portland. Thankfully, they finally got that fixed. They got it fixed in time for Juju Watkins and USC versus Paige Beckers and UConn last night. But somehow, even though they got it right for last night, somehow they actually let five games play out on a court with uneven three-point lines in Portland before somebody finally figured that out. That much I don't get. In fact, that blows my mind. I'm not even talking about something that would be hard to eyeball. I'm not talking about a few centimeters here. One side of the floor had a three-point line that was 9 inches shorter at its apex. 9 inches. Nearly a full foot. You're going to tell me that you can't tell if you're shooting from 9 inches closer. Seriously. At that level of play, nobody knew? No shooter, no laser, no three-point specialist, nobody. Nobody who lives at the three-point line could tell that the address not only changed, but the zip code did. 9 inches? And I'm not trying to point the blame at anybody in particular for this. I'm trying to point the blame at everybody involved with this. Because how did nobody notice? How is that even possible? Nobody on any of the teams playing on that court and shooting from beyond those lines noticed. Nobody playing noticed. Nobody coaching noticed. No NCAA official noticed. No Zebra noticed. Nobody working the broadcast, producing the broadcast, operating the cameras. Nobody anywhere noticed for basically 4.5 games, 4.5 tournament games. Nobody knew? Of course the NCAA, Chris Cartered, the court contractor, and then dropped the quote, "We will work with all of the NCAA suppliers and vendors to establish additional quality control measures to ensure this does not happen in future tournaments." End of quote. Oh, you will?
You got to have a fall guy in the crew.
You got to have a quality control measure in the crew. I've got a quality control measure for you. Quote, "We will work with all NCAA suppliers and vendors to establish additional quality control measures." Here's your quality control measure. Your freaking eyeballs. And yes, the NCAA should have noticed sooner. But everybody else should have noticed sooner as well. I just can't understand how 4 full games get played on a court where 1 3-point apex was that much shorter than the other one. 9 full inches. Normally, I would say make that make sense, but that will never make sense. But again, at least they got it right in time for UConn, USC last night. So, way to go, Portland. Give yourself a hand. Way to get it fixed, finally. And per usual. Per usual, again, I do not have any issue with Portland. I have an issue with that. I have an issue with that for sure, but not Portland. Because I know you clones, you'll make it about Portland. It's not about Portland. It's about everybody involved with that tournament. Oh no, Rome, it's definitely Portland's fault. Insert bad, regurgitated reset about Portland. I want to be so clear on that. Portland is such a great jungle town. Always has been. we had an absolutely legendary tour stop in Portland back in the day, the one where I got to fly in the Black Hawk helicopter, which is still one of the most mind-blowing moments of my entire life, not even career, but in my life, that they let me up in that thing, and that I landed from the Black Hawk and then did the tour stop. One of my favorite stories, one of my favorite experiences, one of my favorite events ever. Portland gave us that. So not only do I not have an issue with Portland, I love Portland. And it's not Portland's fault they jacked up that three-point line for not one, not two, not three, not four, four and a half games. Portland gave us that tour stop and the Black Hawk helicopter. Portland also gave us one of the best lady clones ever, Amber, in Portland. Portland gave us Amber. We have Portland to thank for Amber. Lest we forget, James in Portland. Come on, Aaron. You know that guy's missing Alvy already. My point is, are you going to argue that he doesn't make it better? Are you going to argue that she doesn't make it better? Are you going to argue that Portland does not make it better? Oh, let us also not forget, without Portland, there is no Portland woman.
Well, you know what? We got this phenomenon up here in Oregon, and I call it Portland woman. Portland woman, she doesn't shave, she doesn't clean up. They put her on TV. Turn on any Portland channel with a local show. You'll find Portland woman showing off her stuff, gray hair, no makeup, all the wrinkles to boot. And the clothing is something else. You can see the stain. So, anyways, to Portland woman, please, please, do us all a favor and clean it up. That's all I got, Romy.
Is that it? Is that all? You want to know who's the biggest hypocrite I know? Me. Because I'm going to say to you that personal appearance is not show fodder, and then at the same time say, that guy's the GOAT. I mean, what an incredible call. It only gets better and better and better. Everything about it. Nothing ages that well. Not even Portland woman. They put her on TV. That is absolutely incredible. So again, Portland makes everything better except the three-point line. Without Portland, we don't have Amber. Without Portland, we don't have James. Without Portland, we don't have Portland woman. Without Portland, we don't have the Black Hawk helicopter and the Portland tour stop. So you got to take the good with the bad as it relates to Portland. You have to take the good with the bad and butchering the three-point line by 9 inches in the NCAA tournament is definitely the bad. Really bad. Unless you're shooting from the other end of the floor. And then it's probably not a problem. Come on! How does nobody see that? 9 inches. Probably from the top of the building you could have eyeballed that. So I've got a quick question for you. Are you looking for ultimate comfort and pain relief? Let's compare G-Defy shoes to other shoe brands that promise comfort and support and pain relief. Typical shoe brands rely on EVA soles for cushioning, but G-Defy offers so much more. G-Defy goes above and beyond with VersoShock technology, providing superior shock absorption and energy return if you suffer from foot, knee, or back pain. G-Defy's advanced technology may help provide you with the relief you deserve. I can't even believe these shoes and the difference they make for me. G-Defy shoes also offer 2 free supportive orthotics to help improve your body's biomechanics, resulting in proper body alignment and ultimate comfort. Yes, they do all that. So whether you're an athlete, a busy parent, or just somebody who's always on the go, G-Defy shoes offers the versatility and the comfort that your feet crave and need. Say goodbye to discomfort. G-Defy is more than EVA soles. It could be your path to unparalleled comfort and pain relief. Visit G-Defy.com today. Experience ultimate comfort and pain relief at G-Defy.com. GDEFY.com. Use the code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. That's code JIM30 for $30 off orders of $150 or more. GDEFY shoes. They are incredible. We are joined right now by the manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He is in his eighth season at the helm. He was the 2017 National League Manager of the Year. He played 8 years in the bigs. He was a coach on the 2013 World Series champion Boston Red Sox last year. Led the Diamondbacks to the NL pennant and the franchise's second ever trip to the World Series. Of course, I'm talking about Torey Lovello. Torey, it is absolutely great to spend a little bit of time with you. Great to have you back. Torey, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Romy, and I likewise. I always appreciate my time. 818 special area code, man. We got that thing under the hood for us.
Man, that is the truth. 818 for life. So, Torey, how would you describe the team's collective mindset when it arrived in spring training after making such a big run last season? And while it is a small sample size, what do you make of the way they've played so far?
Yeah, so early on this season, I couldn't be more pleased. Our guys have come out firing, and we won a series against the Rockies, lost a tough game last night against the Yankees. We were playing really good baseball. But, you know, I think the collective mindset was to go out there and uphold our standard. Not to set up an expectation, but just to say, look, here's our standard. This is what we play like. This is what we look like. And this is who we are. And let's live by those rules and try to send that north. Let's make that standard and set that bar, get raised and just set it a little bit higher. So the boys came in, you know, we started early on in the off season talking about what the off season plan should be. We played an extra month of baseball. What can you do to let your body recover, but not let it go totally stale? The guys got after it. When they stepped into the arena, on day one of spring training, they were very focused and they were very ready. And that to me is my biggest concern. If our team is hungry and focused, we're going to have good days. And I want to have more good days than bad days, and so far we have.
I like it. Stack the good days. The standard's got to be the standard. Standard over the feelings. And, you know, when you talk about a standard, Torey, you're talking about an identity, right? So was the identity of the group already established and rooted in the culture that you developed there, or does every single team have its own identity?
Well, that's a great question. I will say that, you know, we have our values and our standards that here that we follow, right? And, you know, it starts with love, trust, commitment, and effort. And when you walk into this clubhouse, that's who you are and that's who you've become, because you've been dialed up through our system. And, you know, the majority of our players have come through player development. So I think everybody understands what they got to do to go out and uphold that standard and those values and really the culture. And that's bringing people together for the common cause to go out every single day. And we're going to budget to have bad days. It's not always going to be perfect, but our guys understand what it takes to go out and become and be a winner. They got to walk a special walk last year, and nobody handed that to us. And we don't have to defend it. That's ours. It's not. Nobody's going to take away 2023 from us. That'll belong to us forever. But we know what it takes to get there. And to me, I ask the guys, what are you willing to do every single day? What is your commitment level, and what can you do to go out and do your job to the best of your ability that's going to fit into this ball club? And our guys know that. Everybody will talk about that. Everybody will kind of have my back on that, because that's all we really know.
Torey Lovello joining us. So the core values, love, trust, commitment, and effort. I mean, Torey, you played the game a long time. You've managed the game a long time. You've coached the game a long time. Like, love. Do the guys have to love one another to be truly successful? Or can you win at a really high level? And, you know, frankly, you know how clubhouses go. Not everybody loves everybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I will say the ones that that I've been in that have been winning teams and winning cultures. And, you know, I even look at the LA Rams championship season when they finally won, and it was still the game was in the balance. Aaron Donald sacked the quarterback, Joe Burrow, ran off the field. And the first thing that he said to Coach McVay was, "I love you, man. I love you." When you start with that bond and that deep care for one another, and it's not, "I love you, I want to marry you." It could be, "I love you, get your butt in gear. I love you, this is what will help you. I love you, and let's go together." It could mean so many different things. And when you say the word love inside of a culture, inside of a clubhouse, it's a little bit sticky. But our guy, it's very common for somebody to walk into my office and we end a meeting like, "Hey man, I love you, let's go to work, let's make this happen." They accept it. And I think it's the glue that holds everything together. And if you start with that, if you start with really caring on a very genuine level about one another, and what they're doing every single day, it does build trust. And when you have trust, it's very powerful, but it's got that common glue that to me means love. And when Aaron Donald and Coach McVay did that, it really solidified everything for me, because I thought I was a crazy man when I was talking about loving up my players the way that I do. But he confirmed that it really works.
You know, Tori, I get it. I've reached a point in my life where I got no problem saying it. I say that to people that are really important to me and really critical in my business and my life. I say it almost every single time I talk to my attorney, because he's in the middle of a lot of stuff right now. I'm like, hey, yo, man, I love you, because I know he's putting himself out there for me, and I couldn't do what I do or what I need to get done in this particular instance without him. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's not unusual to me at all. What's interesting is the analogy you made, and you pointed to the Rams. As somebody who is a leader of others, are there other coaches in other sports or other leaders in other walks of life or in business that you look to that you take a lot of inspiration from?
Absolutely. You know, I do watch the LA Rams, being from LA. I'm a big Coach McVay fan. I haven't had a chance to meet him. I would love to one day, but I've met friends of his. You know, P.J. Fleck, University of Minnesota head coach. Sean McDermott is a very close friend of mine, the head coach for the Buffalo Bills. Those are guys that I'm able to talk values with, morals, cultures, and we share information. Really, it's a shared profession. You don't steal stuff. You just share it. But I would feel like where I got started was at UCLA with Coach Wooden. I had a chance to meet him and talk to him on a couple of different occasions. And, you know, pyramid success is a real thing. Businesses are run and operated on it. It's not just sports. So Coach Wooden was probably is my standard. And then I've just enhanced it by asking questions of others around me. And we share great information. And you can see the cultures at work. You can see that the head coaches and other professions where it really works and they're really invested. It's a real thing, and we carry it around every single day.
I like it. Tori Lavello joining me for another few moments. Tori, how gratifying was it to see the team have the year it had, and then ownership stepped in the aftermath of that big year by spending $161.5 million in free agency? That was the fourth highest in all of baseball. What kind of a message did that send the clubhouse and the fans?
Yeah, I'm so grateful for Mr. Kendrick, Derek Hall, Mike Hazen, that group for laying down the game plan and then executing it. It's one thing to say this is what you want, here are your targets, and then going out and get them is a whole new level of success. So we knew where there were some gaps, and what it says to me is that our ownership is as committed as everybody inside of this building, and they want to bring a world championship to this town. They are going to do their absolute best, and they trust what's going on from the field level, where I take care of my business, and then Mike Hazen and his company with the acquisitions. It's a very healthy system where it's built on trust, and it means I'm committed to you guys. Go out and make good things happen. Got to have good players to win baseball games. We know that. When you bring the right guys in and they plug into this culture, it gets very powerful.
I love it. We had a conversation before the start of last season, and you said to me, it was on Radio Row, hey, I'm telling you, Jim, we've got some good stuff going on here. We have some good things. I have high expectations, and then you ran that thing all the way to the World Series, and now you're back for more. Tori Lavello is the manager of the Diamondbacks, 8 years in now, and a great, great friend of the jungle. Tori, 818 for life. Great to have you on. Thanks for making time, and I know we'll do it again soon, my guy.
All right. I'll look forward to it, Romy. Talk to you soon.
Be good, Tori. Appreciate you. Tori Lavello. Man, it's hard to imagine, but, and I love Tori for so many different reasons, but he would come on as a player. He was a great jungle guy as a player. Played 8 years in the bigs, and the friendship remains. And stuff like that means so much to me. More now than ever before. So I appreciate you, Tori. Thank you very much. Skip, clones, what do we want when we're craving protein or we need more energy? Not bars, not sugary snacks, not energy drinks. No, we want beef. Pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your father's jerky. Shriveled, dry, and tasteless. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and it's tasty. It's not tough. And why is it so good? Because Old Trapper is a 50-year-old family business known for their relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein, and it comes in four amazing flavors that satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. That way you can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? James Kelly and I especially talk about this quite a bit. In the NFL, fit and situation mean everything. You could be the right person in the wrong situation. You could be the right person in the wrong fit. Fit and situation mean everything. I'll tell you who also made a very good point, or a good argument for that. My guy Jordan Palmer on episode 307 of the Jim Rohn podcast, he was talking about Sam Darnold and why Sam Darnold, he thinks, and he admits, disclaimer, I'm tight with him. Jordan said, I know Sam very well. I go way back with Sam. I've known Sam since he was young. So let me just say that. But, and then he laid out all these arguments why Sam Darnold will do really, really well in Minnesota. Because up until now, he has not had a good fit, a good situation. So let me just state that point. Fit and situation not only matter, they're almost everything. Some people never really get an opportunity, and therefore they never get set up for success because of fit and situation. Some people, let me repeat that, some people never get an opportunity and they never get set up for success. And those people are not named Carson Wentz, because it seems like for Carson Wentz, wherever he goes, whenever he's shown the door, opportunity still follows. Like, he's always shown the door. But whatever door he's behind, opportunity is still on the other side knocking. That makes no sense to me. Whatever door he is shown, there's still always opportunity on the other side. And this time, the opportunity banging down Wentz's door is, believe it or not, an opportunity with the Kansas City Chiefs. For real. This dude is now Patrick Mahomes' backup. Turns out that's not an April Fool's joke. I never respond to anything that I see anywhere, online or off, on April 1st, because I always know it's some moron making an April Fool's joke. So I saw that. I saw the Chiefs signing Wentz, and I thought, yeah, right. Psst, please. So I didn't react. But then I woke up, and it was April 2nd, and he was still a member of the Chiefs. Like, I hate all April Fool's jokes, because they're all lame. Except that one, I thought, that's funny. That's funny. Like, they're going to let that guy back up Patrick Mahomes. But they are. So I had to wait till this morning to make sure. And, yep, it's a real thing. And I guess when you really think about it, it does make sense, right? Wentz already has that one ring that he pretty much has nothing to do with. Why not chase another one that he'll have nothing to do with? Even less. Even less to do with. In fact, never mind a ring. Never mind chasing a ring. Why not chase a dynasty that has nothing whatsoever to do with him? Why even try to chase a starting gig when you can just sit there and hold a clipboard for a dude that never loses? And look, I get it. From a Chiefs perspective, it doesn't really matter who the backup quarterback is. If the backup is in the game, they're probably screwed. So who really cares who the dude is? Besides, they've proven it doesn't matter who their backup is. They've already gotten away with the likes of Chad Henne, Blaine Gabbert, and Matt Moore as backups. How much worse could Wentz be than those dudes? Then again, you know how the Chiefs got away with that many scrubs backing up Mahomes? Mahomes never actually comes off the field unless they ask him to quarterback sneak. And even then, he wasn't off the field that long. After dislocating his kneecap on that play call, Pat's like, hey, man, just pop it back in. Like Caron Butler, pop it back in like a shuffleboard. Just slide that thing back up my leg. It's safe to assume they're never, ever going to ask the one day soon to be GOAT to ever sneak it ever again. So he may never actually come off the field ever again. Meaning Wentz may never actually see the field again. at least not in KC, which is why being Patrick Mahomes' backup is an amazing gig. You don't have to lift a finger, and you can contend for a Lombardi every single year. Riding the pine in Kansas City is essentially grabbing a first-class seat on the gravy train. I mean, you got to give it to Wentz, man. I don't know how this guy does it. He is something else. This dude just keeps failing and falling forward. In addition to having a ring that somebody else won for him, he now gets to be on a team with the best player in the entire world, that gets followed around by the biggest pop star in the entire world, and all of that despite getting run out of pretty much every town he walks into. Who knows? Maybe this is the one stop that actually does repair his image. You know, the one where we all rethink the way we see Wentz. The one stop where we forget that he went from being a surefire MVP to a journeyman. Where we forget that he went from being the face of a franchise and a too-good-to-be-true leader to a dude that seemingly nobody wants to be around. Maybe being a chief will repair his image enough that somebody will actually want him for a role where he might actually play. I mean, crazier things have happened. This dude is still just 31. In the meantime, my man, no matter what happens, good on you. Way to find a gig, despite the fact that absolutely nobody wants to see you on the field, including, I would guess, the Chiefs. Let's be real. Just because they signed you doesn't mean they want you to play. My man, just keep doing what you do best, falling forward. I have no idea how you do it. I just know that nobody does it better than you. In that regard, you are a first ballot Hall of Famer. That's not an April Fool's joke. That guy really is a member of the Chiefs. That guy really is backing up the best quarterback and the best player in the NFL.
Mahomes?
And I kind of think that Andy Reid knows exactly what the hell he's doing. I kind of think that Brett Veach knows exactly what the hell they're doing. I think they know who they brought in. I don't know why they did it, but man, this dude's got a good life. That's a good gig now. No, you're not the MVP you thought you would be. No, you're not the icon and legend you thought you would be. But man, you keep pulling a paycheck. And you don't have to work that hard to get it. Just show up. Just keep showing up. Hey, Chiefs fan, how do you feel about that? Are you secure and confident that if all hell broke loose and somehow Patrick did get hurt, that they're going to turn the dynasty over to Wentz? Are you confident in that? At G-Man, to all. They said the same thing when Darnold went to the 49ers. That'd be a great fit because the coach was a genius. Blah, blah, blah. But where is he right now? For the moment, he's QB1 in Minnesota. So going to SF actually ended up working out pretty well for him. That was Jordan Palmer's point. He finally went to an organization that did things the right way. That Darnold walked into that building, looked around, and was like, oh, damn. So that's how they do it. That's how a first-class operation runs. That's what you do. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you find just the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts are extremely knowledgeable, helpful, and best of all, they are friendly. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto, do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. Once again, O'ReillyAuto.com/Rome. looking upset because they just got a ticket for using their phone while driving? And what about the fast scroller who can't drive 5 minutes without updating their social feeds? Or the nightlighter who has that mysterious glow illuminating the inside of their car after dark? Do any of these sound familiar? If they remind you of yourself or somebody you know, rethink your behavior before you find yourself becoming the fender benderer, the veering off the roader, or worst of all, the driver who killed someone. Put the phone away or pay. Paid for by NHTSA. You love to hate. Love them or hate them. And clones, I know the majority of you choose the latter. Whenever I mention them, I'm talking about the Astros. And they did not get off to a good start. So, they're not playing well. You hate them. However, they are once again legit World Series contenders, which I know is only going to anger you even more. And they have been for what? The better part of like a decade. How do I know this? One, I look at them on paper. Two, although they have not gotten off to a good start, I look at them on paper and then I can see what they're capable of between the lines. And then three, I look at most sports books. They have them favored to win the American League, if you don't care about my opinion. If you don't care about my take or my opinion, that's fine. I get it. But you should care about the opinion of most sports books, because the book usually wins. So, go ahead, now that I've said that, send your garbage can, sign-stealing jokes, I get it. I mean, that's going to stick to them forever, and it should. And you all keep thumbing it out until the end of time, until they put every last one of you in the ground, I get that too. And the better they play, the more you hate them. So, be ready to get miserable again, because I know you are enjoying their bad start, because they are legit. Now, they did not start the season well. In fact, they started the season the opposite of well. They started the season, how do I put this? In fact, I don't want to put this any other way. I'll let Rachel in Houston tell me. If you were to ask Rachel in H-Town, wherever she is, they started the season out as ass. They opened up their season by getting swept in a four-game series against the Garrett Coleless Yankees at home. Not good. 0-4 against the Yankees, who are playing well. Really well. But without Garrett Cole. Go ahead, James. I know you love that.
I don't.
I knew you could find that, James.
I don't know. I don't know if.
I know why you identify with that, James, because you sound just like him. When you and I do big head bets, you sound exactly like that. I mean, that's why you love that.
There are customs and practices that have been passed down from
hey Garrett,
older players to younger
did
players.
Did you use Spider Attack or not? Answer the question. If Johnny Mack were here, he'd be like, answer the question, jerk.
Things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard. And
answer the question. Did you not use Spider Attack? Yes or no? So, let's just say, Astro fan, you start the season 0-4, you're not feeling great about yourselves, and then Ronel Blanco gets the ball. He takes the bump, and he's going to start against Toronto. So, we're talking about a dude who's a third-year major leaguer, who has spent a lot of his time coming out of the bullpen, and was making just his eighth career start. And the night starts off like their season has started, like ass. You never want to start a game by walking the first guy, right? But that's exactly what he did. He walks George Springer. And Astro fans have to be thinking, great, here we go again. But then the damnedest thing happened. This same dude, in his eighth career start, on an 0-4 team, retires the next 26 guys that he faces. No cap. He set down 26 in a row. 26 batters until he faced Springer again in the ninth. And he walked him again. But outside of that, that dude was perfect. And as you might imagine, as is always the case, an ain't no hitter. You got some great defense at some point to save the no-no. It happened in the ninth from first baseman Jose Abreu off a smoked ball from Astro icon Craig Biggio's son, Gavin, to keep that no-hit bid alive.
He is two outs away.
Oh, man.
One out away from 2024's first no-hitter. And Jose Abreu from his wallet makes the play.
Kevin. Hey, what up, Bish? What up, both you Bishes? Craig Biggio used to be a mainstay on this show back in the day. Bags, Bish, Cammy. Love those guys. Love them back in the day. Brad Ausmus. Truly an incredible play, though, by Abreu that set up the final out of the game against Vlad Jr. Check out all the sons of legendary major leaguers.
Ground ball. Dubon throws to first. No hitter! Renaud Blanco in his eighth career start.
How unlikely is that? Astros 10. Blue Jays, nothing. No runs, no hits, no hitter. Ronel Blanco, one of the most unlikely cats in the history of Major League Baseball. Now, I know there have been guys that have thrown no hitters that came out of nowhere to do it, but this guy truly is one of the most unlikely guys. He never pitched past the sixth inning of a game before last night, but he just no hit what is expected to be one of the better lineups in baseball in the Blue Jays. And as I mentioned earlier, that was his eighth career start. Before that, he had made 24 career MLB appearances, 17 of them out of the bullpen. It's wild. And before that, in his 7 years in the minors, I mentioned 7 years in the minors, he only started 34 of a possible 202 games and didn't make his MLB debut until he was 28. But just set down 26 Blue Jays in a row. I know it's only one game. And the no-hitter became the new shutout a long time ago. But that's a pretty big dub for a team that needed one. And for that guy, man, that's mind-blowing. So I'm not going to tell you how to feel about the Astros. If you want to hate them, hate them. I'm not going to try and talk you off that point. I essentially don't give a damn about them at this point. Or the fact that they cheated out their asses. At this point, I don't really care. I'm neither Team Astros, and I'm definitely not Team Hate. I'm Team Content. And the fact that a dude who bumped around the minors for 7 years and didn't make his MLB debut until he was 28 and just threw a no-hitter after spending all that time coming out of the bullpen is pretty mind-blowing, even for baseball. And while it's impossible for so many of you clones to believe, it is actually possible that this dude just did that without cheating. Maybe even likely. Like, I know some of you may never, ever, ever do it, but I have to give the guy some freaking credit. I mean, for real. I didn't hear any trash cans. I didn't see any other evidence to the contrary. I think the guy actually really did do it.